Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to the Umrepreneur podcast. I'm so excited to bring to you today a dear brother, Brother Saiful Islam, who is actually the co-founder of a previous podcast guest that I brought on. So Brother Omar Da Costa Shahid, they're both co-founders with MIN, which is the Muslim Influencer Network group. And also, the reason why I wanted to bring on Saiful Islam as well is because he's actually working on a number of projects and businesses as well. So he also is a co-founder in Creed and Culture, which we'll talk about soon, inshallah. He's the co-founder of DE&I Consultancy. He's also a consultant for multiple visionary founders, and he works with them behind the scenes to help them really actualize their vision and grow their brand. And he's also ultimately really looking to help Muslims and really people in general who are looking to escape the rat race and build a life of purpose. So we're going to talk a lot about entrepreneurship, about how to actually get out of maybe a difficult situation that you're in and into entrepreneurship, and as well what it takes to grow a successful business, as well as a lot of other fun topics. So definitely stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of value here. Saiful Islam, assalamu alaikum. I'm so excited, man.
Islam, thanks for having me, my bro.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, brother. It's definitely the pleasure is all mine. And one thing that I like to, or at least one area that I like to start focusing on when we begin a podcast, is just giving people a background view on your story, your journey before, you know, before this, essentially this moment where we're facing each other right now, and you're an entrepreneur and you've, alhamdulillah, had all these successes under your belt. But I want to know, who is Saiful Islam behind all of that, right? Who's the person that, you know, went through all of these challenges and obstacles and ended up here? So can you give us a bird's eye view of that journey? That's okay.
I'll do my best. I think we're all probably still figuring out who we are, right? That's the beautiful thing of life. So, I mean, for me, my probably journey started when I was early as 7 to 8 years old, having Asian parents. My father had a restaurant and takeaway. I remember sending me on a bus, literally to Yorkshire, which is about 20 miles away from where I lived, to go and manage the cash in his takeaway. And that was really the inspiration for me wanting to go into business without recognizing it. I went to private schools, really fortunate. My parents put me through private education, even though they really couldn't afford to. But that meant that I only had like three choices in life, being Asian, like engineering, do medicine, or study law. I was useless at science, was okay at math, but probably not good enough to make it a career. And then for me, that left only law as a path for me to pursue some sort of meaning. That meant I went to study law at university, went to quite a good university. But it was in my second year of my degree, whilst I was studying, when I did my placement with a QC barrister, and I was like, I can't really relate to the stories he's telling me. Like all the things that he was telling me when it comes to networking, the situations that he was in, how he'd build business, it didn't quite fit how I viewed life. Mm-hmm. And for me, that meant I had to come up with a decent backup plan. I literally started building a e-commerce business, buying and selling products on eBay to begin with, like a lot of us today. And that meant that my business went from eBay to market stalls to an online business where I utilized what we call today influencers. But back then, the social media personalities at 23 had more money than sense. It was kind of my proof to my parents that I could make it work. Mm-hmm. But it was really a life of emptiness. And it was really devoid of any value. And to that point where you might have the nice flashy car and all the things that today we see in social media, but there was a lot of meaning that was missing. And for me, that meant that I started to search for a bit of value. I met someone who had a nice designer beard, as I call it, like yourself, Abby. And then we started talking about all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And he was like, yo, do you want to go pray Asr? And I was like, what, you pray? Like the guy who just had that inappropriate joke with me. And he was like, yeah, just because I have a laugh and a joke doesn't mean I don't do my fard. And the Asr prayer, the one that I went to him with, it changed my life, alhamdulillah. I did a year in court, which I hated by the end of it. Then worked at a humanitarian organization. That's where I met Omar, like my business partner today. And for me, it's now trying to pursue a life of meaning and purpose. So yeah, that's how I got it, I guess.
Tell me about that a little bit more. So it sounds like that's like a very important theme within your life, which is a life of meaning and purpose. And it's interesting because I think every single person goes through their individual journey of, as you mentioned, we are all kind of students of life and figuring out who we are. And it's, I think it's a never ending journey, right? And there are sometimes, or I would say some people who actually pause that journey at different points in their lives. So some people maybe pause that journey in high school and decide this is who I am and that's it. Some people pause that journey once they finally settle into a 9-to-5 and a wife and kids. And they're like, that's it. That's pretty much who I am at this point. And some people continue to evolve. And I think for entrepreneurs especially, I think entrepreneurs are forced to continuously evolve and understand more about who they are and also how they can shape themselves to ultimately achieve whatever it is they want to achieve. Or even more importantly, instead of saying achieve, I would say to be in a state that they want to be in, which I think is most important. And there's a lot that goes into that. There's a lot that I want to talk about that goes into that. And because I've been through a similar journey myself and going through one at the moment, but I want to ask you, why'd you put such a focus on meaning and purpose instead of talking about goals, income levels, revenue, money? Why are you talking about meaning and purpose? Why is that so important for you? Did you go through a journey where you had to realize the importance of meaning and purpose? Did something happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a very good question. Probably significantly the most, the most interesting thing that happened to me was probably the thing that I didn't realize would be so significant. Mm-hmm. When I was 18 years old, as I was doing deliveries for my dad in the evening in Failsworth, which is a interesting place in Greater Manchester, I remember going to my car. And as I was going to my car, two English lads who were about 10 yards away from me, unfortunately said, "Oi, Paki," which is quite an aggressive statement. I'd been used to that. I went to a private school. I was one of the few Asians in the private school, one of the few Muslims in my year, and playing for the school football team. Been South Manchester, get all types of abuse. You kind of relish it sometimes. But at that moment, I was in a very unsure position because I was out of my comfort zone, felt vulnerable. And then these four lads were repeatedly saying that slur. And for me, I shouldn't have been that smart, Alec. I turned around and said, actually, I'm Naripaki, I'm Bangladeshi, trying to correct them punctually or in grammar, or whatever you want to say and describe. It was an accurate statement for me politically. But what I didn't realize was what would happen next. So as I put my car keys in, literally one of them came from behind and punched me, had knuckle dusters on. And it literally snapped my jaw on this side so significantly that my jaw snapped on that side. I didn't actually feel the pain. That's how significant it was. I was still standing, getting like racistly attacked. And in that process, I actually had, at that point, my brother was 8 years old. He was with me. So me and my brother were very close. He'd work in my market stalls later in my life and he'd do a fantastic job. But because we were so close, we'd hang out all the time. He was on that delivery with me. And I just remember turning around telling him, run. And I remember these lads saying to an 8-year-old, "Do you want some as well?" And for me, that just meant everything that I didn't realize started to take on more significance and an idea of meaning involving particularly unity. And that's why we have Creed and Culture, our diversity and inclusion agency. I didn't realize that everything in my life would start to shift towards that. Even the humanitarian work that I did, it tried to focus on what are the common unique values that unite us instead of divide us, even as Muslims, right? We have so many things going for us as a community. If only we focused on the central themes that are more important than maybe the tertiary ones that really over time are insignificant. That you'd say, I guess, is significant. I didn't really think about it until you asked me that question in that way. But yeah, I guess that can shape your life.
That sounds like a pretty traumatic experience, to be honest with you. That sounds like something really intense emotionally to go through. How did you process that after? And I'm curious to know how it ended, to be honest with you. So, I mean, did they just kind of let off and run away? What happened then?
Yeah, I mean, they sprinted pretty quick. So I remember my dad coming out. And naturally, our mums are really emotional. So my mum was at home. She got the call. Mum's sisters came over. Mm-hmm. And I just remember the staff from my dad's restaurant trying to chase these four lads down and doing a really bad job. Unfortunately, they escaped. But if I saw them again, I genuinely would forgive them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm at that point in my life where I think I would love to just spend time trying to understand why they believed that we had so much difference between us that they should do that. Whether they were under the influence or intoxicated, I don't know. But even then, I think it's a process of education. And look, we've all made mistakes in life. And if we can find a common theme, they don't have to agree with everything that I say or that we'd say, but as long as the idea of respect exists from different communities and perspectives. Yeah, so they might have got off, but they left me with a life lesson. I won't forget the influence of my sisters. I was really overweight at that point, so it actually accelerated me losing a lot of weight. So I saw the silver lining in it all.
Mm-hmm. So when I was talking to you, and thank you for sharing that story, by the way, I know it was a very personal story, and I'm sure it was heavy on your heart. And alhamdulillah, I'm glad to hear that, you know, you're okay. I mean, I'm glad to see that you're okay now. Hopefully there was no long-term damage. I don't know if there was, but hopefully you're okay right now. Is everything okay, or did you suffer any lasting effects?
I've got some cool wiring in the back of my gums, but I know we'll ever see that again.
Alhamdulillah. I'm glad to hear, man. So the reason why I asked that question is because it's interesting enough, in the early years of my entrepreneurial journey, so I wasn't born an entrepreneur. I was actually always going through life, dabbling in different, you know, kind of different projects and different kind of side hustles. But I never really dubbed it entrepreneurship. In the early days of YouTube, I was still super young. I used to watch all these early YouTube channels, and I had bought a camera with like the little money that I had. I'm like, I told my friends, let's make a YouTube channel, and we'd record videos, but we didn't actually ever post them because we didn't have the consistency and of like an actual adult that could do something for a long time and actually build something out of it. But it was fun. It was really fun looking back at it. And I start to remember all these moments where I was always searching. I was searching for something that I could do. And then I found entrepreneurship eventually. And I built my first business and then built the second and built the third. And as I went on building these businesses, the initial motivation was always, oh, I really want to make money. And also for me, I come actually from a background where we weren't so well off growing up. And so for me, money was always like, I really wanted to make sure that I was not in a position where I needed it. And alhamdulillah, that need was actually fulfilled pretty quickly. Alhamdulillah. So even through my first business, it was like, oh, okay, I'm making more than I used to make at my job. I'm pretty comfortable. Finances are no longer an issue. And then at that point, I'm like, okay, so I guess the next goal is I just need to be motivated by wanting more money. Because that's what, like, generally, I think, like, when I watch YouTube videos and when I see people around me, you go into business because you want more money, right? So I need to want the shiny cars, the big mansions and everything. And I remember telling myself this, trying to convince myself of this, but it wasn't like true within my heart. And I would even go and I would watch like these videos, like visualization, like here's all these amazing things and watch these videos of yachts and try to motivate myself. Like, this is what I want, but it would last maybe a few days, a few weeks at most. And then I would go back to baseline where it's like, it wasn't enough to keep me motivated. And after multiple times of trying to motivate myself with money and more possessions, I realized that it just was not working. Like, once my needs were met, it was no longer a motivator. And so I then needed to face the music, as they say, and truly sit with myself and figure out what is actually my purpose. Like, what do I actually want to do? What can I do that brings my life meaning, that brings my life purpose? And this was a process that I'm also still finding to this day. But one of the beautiful things that came out of that process is actually Umarpreneur. And that's the reason why we're on this podcast today. That's the reason why I built this business in the first place, was it came from that line of questioning. What can I do with that? If I do it, I would be happy to do it every single day. You know, money aside, just for the sake of doing it. And it's interesting because you're talking about meaning and purpose right now. And I don't mean to hog the conversation. I usually don't. I apologize. I'm not sure why I'm doing that today. But you were talking about meaning and purpose, and it just, I can relate to it so at such a deep level because I went through that exact journey and I was initially motivated by surface level factors, surface level things. And I had to really first get that and realize that's not enough. So how can I actually, what is there behind that? What is there behind the surface level shiny objects that people make you want? And that's when I had to find my meaning and purpose. And I don't know if you can relate to that story in any way or if you had any comments about, you know, going through a similar journey and maybe if you can share with us, for you, was there anything that, as you go through the journey, was there anything that helped you find your meaning and purpose? Because there's so many people listening to this that haven't yet found theirs.
I think it's finding your own formula for what that means as well. Like, inherently as Muslims in particular, anything worldly, like dunya and like temporary, once you've achieved it, the value is capped, right? So you talked about like reaching the financial goal, getting that car, getting that nice thing, maybe it's Louis Vuitton wallet, whatever it was, the significance immediately erodes once you've achieved it. And the difference between when we shift the mentality and effort between that shiny object that we see that everyone tells us that we need to actually exploring. So instead of trying to work on something that has definitely a ceiling versus exploring who you are with the central theme of trying to please Allah and like do the right thing, recognizing we're all flawed and we'll make mistakes, that is so much more freeing. Because yeah, you don't know, the end result isn't something that you can determine. It's actually an intangible. And exploring intangibles, that's why actually a lot of the most successful businesses today, look at the agency world, whether it's McCann, Ogilvy's, these agencies trade on intangibles.
Yeah,
because they're hard to quantify. Mm-hmm. And when something's hard to quantify, it actually is a very individual journey. And it becomes so much more rewarding and fulfilling. And that's why when we have that central theme of wanting to explore deeper meaning and purpose, then finding whatever that is in the lens and the sense of excellence, because you have to be good at whatever you're doing and committing to, otherwise you probably quit, whilst also seeing some sort of reward immediately and then over the long term. Because if you don't see reward, you'll start to quit. That's why it actually is becoming, it starts to become something that actually overwhelms you in a positive way. Instead of something that is taken away from you and starts diminishing you. I think that's the difference between pursuing something with purpose and a true purpose versus something that's quite temporary and actually unforgiving in the process.
So you work with, we were talking earlier before this podcast, and you mentioned that you personally work with leaders of essentially like meaningful brands, or I would say visionary entrepreneurs is probably a better word for that. And that you're a personal brand advisor and you help them essentially with the leadership and the branding side of things. And I want to know for you, having worked with entrepreneurs that are visionary themselves, have you noticed any common trends in regards to this topic that we're talking about meaning and purpose? Have you noticed anything in regards to them knowing or finding their meaning and purpose? Were they all aligned with that? Or were some of them still on the way of finding it and you had to kind of help them find it for them to unlock their full potential?
So it definitely fluctuates, but one of the most common themes is the fact that these leaders are relentless. Like the appetite and commitment, and I do think that maybe we're creating a generation of softies. I don't know, maybe we all fall part of and feel definitely almost are guilty of that sometimes ourselves. But I think definitely one of the core attributes of those leaders that I've worked with that are visionaries, they have this relentless spirit. It's constant. It's consistent, and they're definitely committed. They might have like a fluctuation of how they achieve the end goal, but there's definitely an appetite to see some sort of commitment manifested in a relentless way, whether that's waking up at like 4:30, 5 in the morning, going for a run, they're back at the hotel and they're like doing a professional. I'm like, how long have you been awake? You know, like the kind of thing. Or they're messaging you throughout the day saying, I've got this idea. What do you think? We need to do more. We need to have more impact. One of the things are they're relentless and they're very strong-willed, strong-minded, you know, like single-minded, single-track kind of approach. And the spirit underpins all of that.
So you're someone who works with a lot of brands as well as a lot of influencers. And so I love the fact that you have like kind of like an insider view into the world of entrepreneurship and business. What have you noticed to be three common traits amongst entrepreneurs that generally are successful or at least on their way to success and entrepreneurs that are still struggling?
So the most successful ones that I've found, entrepreneurs technically and more often than not are very good at vision. Like setting the idea, setting in motion something. So what you tend to find, the best entrepreneurs aren't actually the best at the middle part of growing a business. They're very good at the beginning, very good at the end. The excellent entrepreneurs, the top 1%ers, find people for that middle phase, whether it's we've launched a brand, we need someone to do the day-to-day, you know, getting back to inquiries, sending out items, managing operations. They're very good at finding that and scaling the foundations for that. Whilst those entrepreneurs, you know, we've all been guilty of that process as well, those entrepreneurs that aren't able to make it stick, they're not able to fill that middle hole, that middle gap well enough. They're not able to deconstruct their way of leadership and process it into a procedure that other people can scale. They can take away and apply it. So that's, I think, the thing that distinguishes those at top 1% for me.
Dude, that was like people should replay that. If you're listening to this podcast, go and replay that 30 times, because that is, it rings so true, especially for, you know, you're saying that, and I'm just like, I feel kind of targeted right now, bro. Like, why do you have to attack me like this? Why? Because legit, I'm in this phase right now, an entrepreneur, and it's just kind of like we're in this middle right now, and it's really like, it's all about really, for me, it has been really figuring out how I can build leaders within the organization, right? And put managers in place, and we're creating all these departments and these processes and SOPs. And it doesn't come very naturally to me, because I am much more of a creative as an entrepreneur. And so having to actually go into the kind of like this management mode for me is not something that I enjoy, but it's something that I have to do. And hearing you say this, I'm just like, this is 100% me. Like, what you're talking about is me right now. So do you have any tips for entrepreneurs that are going through this middle phase?
So leaders are builders, not maintainers. Like, as soon as you recognize that, you are able to understand the gap between maintenance and the gap between where you were as a builder. Mm. What needs to happen to start maintaining the business, not just building the business? Leaders don't need to be in the business. They need to be working on the business, right? They need to be working on the future of the business and things like that. If you're in it, then you're not actually moving forward. If you're not moving forward, then most likely you fall behind. So the first thing is, what you need to do is, what resources can you realistically get? Mm-hmm. We have obviously people who have like solopreneurship, they're solopreneurs, they're able to build one-man businesses. What type of business are you? Then once you understand what type of business you are, where are you going? What are the steps for you to be able to get there? Those steps, once you've outlined them, that there might be five things. It might be, I need to hire someone to do the sales outreach. As an example, if you're a B2B business, you might be doing lots of sales outreach, but you can't be doing the sales outreach because you need to close business. If you're closing the business right now, then who's working to deliver the business? Where is your gap? You identify those steps between building and the maintenance. Maintenance is delivery, it's managing client relationships, it's bringing in more pipeline. If you're an agency, marketing, whatever, you then have like some sort of blueprint. That blueprint is your one pager, those steps. Figure out the things, there might be five steps that only you can do because you understand the business better than anyone else. That might be closing the deal, because the variables of a marketing business, you might think, I only know these variables, but I know that I can hand over, like I said before, the sales outreach. I know that I can hand over the day-to-day customer relationships, maybe the emailing. So over time, you want to incrementally increase the things that allow you to maintain the business. And then you keep doing that and doing that. I worked for one of the most process-driven organizations when I was in corp. The CEO could do the job and the most junior person could do the job. I've never seen any business like that. Since I left that business, they IPO'd and then private equity bought them out twice. Wow. Because they were just so process-driven. That was a business at a billion-plus valuation. And that's what I experienced there. That's what I think in particular Muslim organizations can take away, understanding the differences.
So you talk about processes as well. And if we were to talk about that specifically, and you talk about bringing on the right people, you talk about process and a lot of things actually, but I want to focus on those two things, bringing on the right people and processes. So let's focus on bringing on the right people first. So what have you noticed, because you are a co-founder in three businesses, so I'm sure you've had to build teams multiple times over. Have you noticed any common themes in regards to hiring A players to your company, to join your team? Is there something that you look for in a candidate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously value alignment is so important today for a culture, like for a company culture. Like if you're very metric driven, then you need people with hungry personalities. If you're a creative organization, then you probably need those that can be fluid, those that can actually create and think of big ideas. So being able to distinguish what your organization represents is very important. And that's why just have a culture playbook. It doesn't need to be a 90-page manifesto or anything like that. It's just a one pager explaining who you are. And one of the things that I did as we started to get busier and busier, as we started to build different businesses, is I started to make a one pager for me. Mm-hmm. So as we recruited senior people, I'd have a one page guide to say, this is who I am. These are my flaws. And I might talk about so many different ideas at the same time. If I talk about 10 different tangents to keep me on track, but just having that one pager as a senior figure, it creates an expectancy and helps you manage that. The other person knows what to expect from that dynamic. And I didn't do that enough. I didn't maintain that enough. I didn't distribute that enough as we built in particular Creed and Culture, as we then looked to build Inclusive as our group. That's something that if I could go back in time, I'd drum home even more and lead more on the processes of things. So I think that's a continuous thing. It always evolves. It differs depending on the type of organization. But everyone can make a one pager for themselves. You don't need to have an elaborate CV or anything like that. Just list out the values, things that are important to you. List out your communication skills. So like, how do you prefer to communicate? As an example, I try to avoid all social media and WhatsApp till 12:30 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So 6 till 9, most likely I'm on airplane mode. No one can get a hold of me. If it's urgent, come knock on my door, turn on my phone. If you want to get through to me, give me a call, because that's deep focus and deep learning time. For me, that's where I believe all entrepreneurs or visionaries or Muslims, really, we need to take back ownership of our thinking, of our creative thinking, critical thinking. And for me, that's that period that you need to be holding on to as the most important asset for your day. Once you've done that, then let people in, because you've had the fluidity of your own thoughts, understanding what you want from the day, how you want to go about your business, your flow state, your deep learning, deep meaning when it comes to your work. Then let people in. It's important to let people in. I need to do that a lot better because I have my own formula, but that's what I do. And that's where I recommend visionaries in particular entrepreneurs have that playbook for your organization, one pager to begin with, and your playbook for yourself.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that. So I'm definitely a huge, huge fan of deep work, and I actually schedule it in my calendar. So I have 2 days where I block all meetings. These 2 days are reserved for deep work, because if I don't, it could literally get filled tomorrow just with meetings, customer fulfillment, and all kinds of tasks within the business. And then I just never have any time to actually work on the business. So especially now that we're in this transitory phase where we're hiring more people, training more people, and delegating more, that balance between the deep work and the meetings and everything else is super important. One thing that I actually don't have enough time for is networking and actually just getting to know other entrepreneurs. And I'm very guilty of this, and I'm just want to put it out there for anyone listening. I promise if you send me a message and I didn't reply, it's not because I don't like you. It's not because I think I'm better than you. I really just don't have time right now. That's just literally the reality of it. And it's kind of like there's a priority list in my life. There's family, wife, business, and then everything else, right? So if those top three are not met, I can't take care of anything else. And right now I only have time for the top three. So my question to you is this. I don't know if this is going to get better or not. I don't know if my schedule is going to get easier or not. Probably won't. So how do you make time for networking? How do you make time for communicating with people and kind of getting to know people and replying to messages? I don't understand the entrepreneurs that are like, oh, message me on LinkedIn. Like, don't message me on LinkedIn, guys. I'm not going to answer. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just being straight up. I'm not going to answer. So how do you make time for this? I'm not trying to be mean. Like, it's just, I don't have the time for it. How do you make time for this? What's your opinion on this?
It's a tricky thing. I remember at one point last year. So as part of building our agency capacity, we're looking for partners around the world. I went across South America, meeting agencies. We had 20 plus team members across 4 different time zones, and I'm here in South America. So it meant that I was taking business meetings at like 12 at night just to catch up with someone who was in a different time zone. So it can be very corrosive. One of the things I actually learned in that process of being everywhere but not being present was realizing that you didn't have to have tons, hundreds, thousands of relationships. It's not needed. Mm-hmm. This social media world that we live in it's a fallacy for me, and it's actually misleading and taking us away from us developing our own way of doing things.
Yeah.
That individualism, the independent thinking that you need to develop, especially as an entrepreneur, that's your formula. So for you, if that works, you know, stick by it, take ownership of it, be unapologetic about it. I think it's your life. No one should be dictating to you how you do things, as long as the other person is aware and can appreciate somewhere your own rules and your own playbook. What's your schedule? How do you do things? if a person's unaware, there's an unmanaged expectancy. I think that through my life, to be honest. She'd be the last person I'd tell and have all these business meetings, got to be in London, got to be here. And she's like, just keep me in the loop. It's like, oh, yeah, of course. It's just maybe it's a shared calendar or whatever. Or just, by the way, yeah, I've got this coming up in a few days. Mm-hmm. One thing I'd say is just focus on building relationships that have meaning and they're deep relationships. That's my goal for this year. Don't want right. relationships. I just want deep and meaningful ones. And it actually starts first with yourself. Like, just really be forgiving for yourself, on yourself, and with your family, spending more time with them, being present. Because I just want to create every relationship in some sort of proximity. Like, those that are most proximate to us are actually our family members. Yet we're here saying to everyone, we want to change the world, we want to benefit everyone else. And we neglect the people closest to us. Mm-hmm. We've got it messed up in. And I think that's because of the societal pressures in social media. For me, even though our businesses are built in social media, it's quite ironic that I actually like spending very little time in social media.
I agree. Yeah. Mm. I don't even have Instagram on my phone, to be honest with you. So I, like, one of the first things that I delegated within the business is social media. And even the content that I create, I'll usually create in advance, and then my social media manager takes care of posting it. I'll still log in here and there to reply to comments, but usually I reply to them like 1 week late. Hopefully no one gets offended. But I try to avoid spending too much time on there, because I'm with you. I can actually feel, and here's the thing. I can literally feel the days. If there's a day where I'm picking up my phone a little bit more often, even social media, I include WhatsApp into it, right? Like, if I'm picking up my phone, I'm looking at my WhatsApp groups, which WhatsApp is a whole other conversation, bro. I think it's worse than social media, to be honest. But I digress. So on the days where I have my phone and I'm picking it up and I have these social media and I can notice that I'm consuming more content, I swear to you, I can literally tangibly feel my brain being more of a rat brain and just kind of like wanting distractions consistently. And it's that much harder to get into deep work. Just because that day I spent more time on social media, it's like, oh, my brain was like, hey, can we get more of that dopamine hit? And so trying to focus on something becomes even harder. And so if I notice that difference tangibly just in one day from using my phone a bit more than normal, I mean, imagine the difference for people who use it every single day. And they're like, oh, nah, no problem. It doesn't like affect my concentration. I mean, of course it is. It's like frying your brain. But I don't know if you agree with that. It's a big statement. Well,
I think so. It's like, you've got to think about WhatsApp, right? The whole process of WhatsApp is actually really erratic. You're on this platform and ping after ping, message yeah. after message. Look, it's needed. We have to communicate. It's how my grandparents, God bless her. So like, how she see my WhatsApp status, like 80 plus, like I wouldn't have never been able to communicate with my gran back in the day. But it's an erratic formula, and it actually creates erratic behavior. What you put in is what you get out. So that's why I don't try not to let it in before 12:30, because everything thereafter starts to become more and more erratic, more outside of the process and methodology that I'd like to have control of. Because it's starting to take control of your behavior. Yes. Mm. And that's the thing with social media, is we weren't actually trained. We weren't actually educated about how to use these tools. Every other area in life, we go through training, whether it's, you know, med school for medics, how to drive, the bar for those who want to be barristers in the UK, that legal school and things like that. But with social media, it kind of was dropped on us. And we were told, hey, here's this useful thing, or you think it's useful, learn how to use it. Mm-hmm. And it became more and more, as soon as it became more financially driven, it started to become all about, how do we keep people here? How do we make sure that cohort analysis looks good? All the data points for our investors. So everything is designed to keep us on the platform, from the notifications and things like, even I found the other day, one of the hardest things to find on your iPhone is actually how to turn location off. Mm. Like, it should be very simple to find in your menu to be able to turn location off. But you have to go into settings, you have to go down settings, privacy, you have to then toggle it off, and then you're asked, did you turn it off? You know, turn off location. Mm. Why? Because that's another data point, and I'm not here being like a conspiracy theorist, but everything is designed to create value for the investor. And that's another metric that they can measure human being on. That's what WhatsApp is about. We're starting to provide data points and tangibles that they think they can assess human beings on. Human beings weren't designed to be binary. We weren't designed to be reduced to be binary either. So the sooner we get ownership of these things, of the way that we think about things, the way that society is being designed, the more freedom we'll start to create. Whether it's financial freedom or not is another thing, but we know we can definitely get freedom over our thoughts. It's a process, and it's one that you have to be able to be committed to, knowing that you're going to be volatile in the process. I went from being like 8 to 7 kg in chicken and meat all the time to realizing I want to be flexitarian. Like, alhamdulillah, at this moment in time, I have chicken twice a month, red meat once every 6 weeks, every 3 days. Like, I believe it's the closest to the sunnah.
But that that's a prophetic diet, 100%.
The first 10 days, though, it was rough. I was like mood swings and everything, because someone else had tried to design how I was living my life and what I was consuming. And then as soon as I took ownership of it and said, you know what, I need to escape how I'm feeling over a longer period of time, the volatility in my mood, in what I want to give to the world, if I want to be a person that lives a life of legacy and meaning, what am I doing? I can't talk about telling others to live a more prophetic life or a meaningful life. What are the things that I need to assess? And the diet, what we consume, is one of the most important things for me. Mm-hmm.
I completely agree. And it's interesting you're saying that now, because again, all of this conversation is subhanAllah happening at a very timely, at a very important time for me, because even right now, as I started this new year, one of the things that I wanted to focus on, we were talking about meaning and purpose, and that was important for me. And it was also about balance for me, about how over the last few years in entrepreneurship, I've actually let my businesses run my life. And I used to try to fit my life around my business. And that was actually one of the biggest complaints of my wife as well. It's like, you never make time for me. You know what I mean? And I'm sure every entrepreneur experiences that, right? And so now it's like, okay, how can I like be more intentional about this truly, right? And how can I do it in a way where, you know, it's more fulfilling? Because here's the thing. Here's the thing about this, guys. What I've noticed is that you get out of life what you put in, right? If you're focusing most of your energy into your business, and then, you know, you're treating spending time with your family, your friends, your spouses as a chore, like, oh, I have to do this because she's asking me to, and then you're not fully into it, you're not, that moment that you spend with her, you're not going to enjoy, and she's not. But when you actually decide, which is more intentionally, to say, you know what, I'm going to build my business around my life instead of building my life around my business, and those moments that I spend with the people that are precious to me, I'm actually going to try to extract as much juice as possible and really be fully present, you then actually start to enjoy it more, and you get so much more out of every moment, right? And this is something that I've noticed as well, that I've had to come to realization to through my own mistakes and through my own learning experiences. Like, I'm not perfect. And alhamdulillah, you know, recognizing this, I just feel so much more fulfilled in my day-to-day. I feel so much more fulfilled in my week, and I feel more excited to work on my business, and I'm also a lot less stressed. My mental health is in such a better place, and everything is better, alhamdulillah. And I, in regards to what you were saying earlier, because you intentionally block time, right? You block time away from social media, and you say, this is my time where I can focus on what matters to me. And what matters to me in that morning is I want to make sure that I have my best ideas, and I'm focusing on those, and I can extract those, right? And then eventually later on in the day, I can then turn on social media and get, you know, sucked into that world. But having that intentionality where you're like, I'm going to build these things in a way that I want to design my life in the way that I want to. And I think the best way to describe it is you're intentionally designing your life, right? You're living a life by design instead of letting kind of life take its course and drag you wherever it wills. And I think that's so important for entrepreneurs, because it's the only way you end up actually being able to grow your business to where you want it to and actually achieve the mission and vision that you're hoping to achieve, inshallah.
I think it's a process though. And, you know, as an example, we went from a large team to trimming it down to become very lean. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'd lost, you know, I have a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, two daughters, and they were getting the worst quality of time because it was always leftover safe. It was always like, you know, 7 p.m., I'm home now. They go to sleep at 8. So we get an hour, phones going off still, emails, thinking about that client. And one of the things we intentionally trimmed down the team as the process of scaling back the business, certain clients and all the challenges of business as that started to develop. And then it gave me the opportunity to restructure my relationship first with myself and then my daughters in particular. My wife is able to go back to work. You know, she works 2 to 3 days a week, Wednesday to Saturday. So who looks after my daughters at the moment? And it might be a temporary thing, I don't know. It's me though, it's me. And a lot of the time I'm most recent, I'm on my own looking after my daughters. As entrepreneurs, you want to see reward immediately. So it's really hard to begin with. At first, I'm like struggling. I'm like, call my mom, like saying, can you come over? I might need some support here. You know, like one, I'm changing the diaper upstairs, or she's not peeing on the floor. The other's crying downstairs. They're on the opposite ends of the house, and my phone's still going off because clients are still, you know, messaging or emailing. And then as I took ownership again and started to become unapologetic, and this is the whole thing with Western Muslims in particular, us millennials and Gen Z, the more we take ownership, and the more we start to become unapologetic about our identity, not saying extreme, but just once you understand what your identity is, knowing that's still only a process where you're evolving, when you start to take accountability and be unapologetic about it, it's so much more rewarding and freeing. My daughters now, like the what I found that works for me is trying to wake up maybe an hour earlier before they do, so I can just have that me time, maybe go for a run if I can. Sometimes it is actually at the end of the day in particular, but it might be just going through my tasks. It might be just doing a little bit of reading if I can, if I'm in that particular mode. Just taking back that control. Mm. It has such a significant impact on my day. I've done days where I've woken up like the same time in the UK at the moment, Fajr is around 7 a.m. anyway. So they're waking up 7, 8, and I'm waking up that time. And I'm telling you, it's a disaster. Because I'm playing catch up and letting the day control me. I'm reacting. It's reactionary. You know, nappy here, food here. I was supposed to make breakfast by this time. But when you start to realize there's little hacks that we can have, and these are all things that are designed to be able to find the essence of how to be the best version of ourselves, then we start to realize this is actually really empowering. Like spending time with my daughters, going to simple things like going to Tesco or going for a walk. You know, hearing my daughter say to me, don't tell mommy, please, that you go to sweets, and her just start laughing. Like, I never thought it'd bring me so much warmth and comfort. And then later in the evening, my wife came home. She's like, why did you get these sweets? And my daughter went, I told you so, daddy. And I was like, this is genius. Where did they learn this stuff? So rewarding. And we've got things wrong. And now it's about time we get things right. And it's all about just taking ownership and having that authority over who you are, not being apologetic. And when you do, then even if others in the process have to lose something, in the process of you winning, most likely you find something that unites. Because over time, things are compassionate, we are empathetic, and we are those that want to be forgiving in nature. So I think that's the way that we need to kind of approach life and business as entrepreneurs. We always want to see the instant reward, especially in the social media world that we live in. If we have the ability to be patient, we'll see that we live actually more purposeful and meaningful lives in the process.
100%. Beautiful words, bro. Thank you for sharing that story. It's a heartwarming story indeed. So let me ask you this, Brother Saifuddin, is there something that I didn't ask you on this podcast? Is there a question that I did not ask you today that you felt would be relevant to share, or would be meaningful to share, or valuable to share with our audience, mainly Muslim entrepreneurs who listen to this?
Yeah, I think before I used to think that everyone who maybe wasn't so good at education shouldn't really pursue a path of education, or someone who comes out of a university degree should go straight into building on business. I actually think the most important thing is that you learn values and learn principles of business first. So you go out and you just study. So you work in a business that is so process driven and so well oiled as a machine, that whatever you go on to achieve and do, you take those principles with you. Right now, in particular, the Muslim landscape, and forgive me, there are great examples. Don't get me wrong, there are great examples. But a lot of businesses and organizations, the Muslim space in particular, we're missing that component. So what happens is, and we're just as guilty, if I'm being honest, as a group of businesses. We have a client and we say to ourselves, we're not going to take on any more work because we don't have capacity and we need to build out our processes and things like that. But as soon as someone dangles that, you know, golden cherry, you're like, no, I've got to take it. I've got to be able to take that business. We'll figure out later. That's the worst way. Nowhere else in life do you figure out the product later before you actually make the sale, right? You know, that doesn't happen. You can't buy a Mercedes or a decent car and the parts are broken or they're not together. So it's very important we understand how to systemize. And that also is a personal thing. and then also a business thing. You need to understand how to systemize your life. Maybe it's more so the entrepreneurs, the visionaries who need to figure that out, because there's an innate need for growth. Human beings have that innate need for growth, in particular entrepreneurs and visionaries. The more you can systemize, create your own blueprint, the more you'll find contentment, happiness amongst the variables. Then when you go to the business, you learn about all the processes, how to scale, you learn the vernacular. That's one of the things I learned from Omar. Like, mashallah, he's one of the best networkers that you'll ever meet. I was always of the opinion in my early 20s, if you're good enough for what you do, it doesn't matter. Networking doesn't matter. People come to you. But in life, you do need people. So you need to know the system deficiencies that you have, particularly in business. Go learn on that. Go and work on that, whether it's public speaking, whether it's understanding how to do sales. I actually would advise as many people as possible to do things they don't like as long as possible, and then come bring that in particular to business and life.
100%. Thank you so much for sharing that. Is there any business right now that you're working on that you could share with our audience? And as well, where can they go to connect with you, stay in touch with you, inshallah? Is there any place that we should tell them to go and follow you?
So inshallah, I'm going to be publishing an ebook soon to help entrepreneurs, particularly visionary entrepreneurs. It's going to be Side Hustle Entrepreneur. So how to literally build a side hustle, especially as we come into a recessionary period, or particularly that might happen. So that's something that I'm working on. I'm also going to continue to work in the things that I find most fulfilling right now, which is leadership, the idea of supporting visionary leaders in particular. So I'll hopefully be simply breaking that down into a course very soon, how to utilize a personal brand to build your business, in particular as a visionary leader. That's something that inshallah will be coming out in the next few months. Beyond that, hopefully you can find me on LinkedIn. Like I said, try to avoid as many social media platforms as possible. Do have my blog, algorithm.blog, as well, if you can find my thoughts.
Awesome. So is LinkedIn the best place where someone should keep in touch to, if they want to take part in your ebook or your upcoming course, inshallah? Is that the best place to go?
Find me on LinkedIn at Simply Safe.
Perfect. All right, Simply Safe. So I'll make sure to include the link to Saiful Islam's profile in the description or show notes, guys. Make sure to check it out and connect with Saif and stay up to date on his hopefully up and coming very soon ebook and course, so that you can benefit from that if you're wanting to start your journey, or if you're a visionary leader who wants to leverage your personal brand for growth and success, inshallah. Brother, it was an absolute pleasure, a podcast. I truly, truly enjoyed every single minute of it. Thank you for being so open and honest with me today and for sharing so much value. I really appreciate you, and hopefully we can do this again soon, inshallah.
Thank you, Abi, for your time. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Like so, don't like that though.